You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
On May 11th, about 30 doctors marched into the Toronto office of the Federal Minister of Natural Resources, Joe Oliver. They briefly occupied the office while another 50 doctors waited outside. It was one of several protests across the country against a planned reduction to the health care coverage for refugee claimants. On July 1st, the federal government plans to eliminate funding for all but the most urgent health care needs. Dr. Meb Rashid was one of the doctors who occupied Joe Oliver's office. He is director of the recently opened Crossroads Clinic, a refugee health clinic run out of the Women's College Hospital in Toronto. He joins me on the line this morning from Toronto. Hello, Meb.
Hi, Jean.
What kind of health care needs are refugees currently covered for?
Well, at this point, the interim federal health program, or IFH as we call it, it's been in place probably since soon after the Second World War ended. And it's a program that pretty much provides the same health coverage as other low-income people would get in Canada. So it provides access to physician visits, laboratory tests, diagnostics. It also provides access to a very basic medication formulary and some emergency vision care and dental care. So, for example, in Ontario, where I am, our health insurance plan provides access to medications, diagnostics, and laboratory tests for everyone in Ontario. Most people who are low income will be on social insurance, and through that they get access to exactly the same medication formulary that's available on the interim federal health program and some emergency dental and vision care as well. So in effect, it's a fairly broad base coverage, but really identical to what's out there for other low income Canadians.
And are any of those services you just mentioned being cut across the board for all refugees?
So what's happening with IFH, the changes are quite dramatic. So for all refugees, their coverage now will be limited to essential or urgent care. And as you can appreciate, defining that's going to be a bit problematic. It also will eliminate access to medications, as well as the emergency dental and vision care. And this will be for all refugees. So maybe for the listeners, it's important to recognize there's two... you can simplistically put refugees into two groups. Those that have been identified as refugees before they come here, they're processed pre-migration. When they arrive here, they have landed immigrant status. And the government refers to them as resettled refugees. The other group are called refugee claimants. So these are people who find their way to Canada and put in a refugee claim. So what the government will be doing is not only limiting service to essential or urgent care for all refugees and eliminating access to medications, but in that group of refugee claimants, they're going to break them down into two groups. So those that are from designated countries, and that's a list that hasn't been made public yet, but I guess simplistically, it'll be a list of countries where Canada does not feel refugees should be coming from. And then people who are not on this designated country of origin, this DCO list. For the folks who are on the DCO list, they will have no health care. So no access to physicians, no diagnostics, no laboratory testing, no medications. And this will come into effect quite abruptly on July 1st. So even if they have arrived before that date and they're covered now, and I can think of a number of people we're following for their pregnancies or children who are sick with asthma or, you know, have seizures that may be controlled on medications after July 1st, if they're on that DCO, that designated country list, they will have no coverage to see us, have no coverage for laboratory tests or diagnostic tests, and they'll have no coverage for their medications.
So just to kind of be clear, and I'm happy that you explained that so well, that the designated country list would be maybe, for example, a country like Mexico that the government has been making noises would be a designated safe country. So if you come from a country like Mexico, then you are considered to be a different kind of refugee claimant than if you come from another country which the government says is not safe.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly it. So it's hard to know who'll be on that list. I think most of us are fairly certain that Hungary will be on that list, Croatia, Slovakia, the Czech Republic, and that's really speaking to the migration of the Roma refugees who have been coming over the last few years to Canada. And the government, I guess the minister himself, has brought this up a number of times in public forums that he doesn't feel that's appropriate. I think most of us also feel Mexico will be on that list. Mexico was the number one source of refugee claimants until a few years ago when a visa was placed on people traveling from Mexico. So, and outside of that, it's hard to know. This might include many countries in Latin America and the Caribbean. We'll know once it's finally released.
What kind of health issues do you deal with in your clinic? Do you see in the people who come to the Crossroads Clinic?
So we have a small clinic at Women's College Hospital in Toronto. It, you know, what we're seeing really depends on the group that's arriving. So we have seen a fair number of Roma refugees, you know, as opposed to some of the folks we're seeing from, let's say, Nigeria or Eritrea. With the Roma, we're seeing a lot of cardiopulmonary disease, so heart problems with the lungs. We're not seeing as much infectious disease as we would perhaps in people who are coming from Africa, where we see a fair burden of things like hepatitis and latent tuberculosis, so it's a dormant form of tuberculosis, parasites. We're seeing a lot of mental health issues, you know, and that's probably consistent in all groups that we're seeing. These are folks who are fleeing persecution generally, and so obviously with their pre-migration trauma, you know, many people it manifests itself as post-traumatic stress disorder or depression. We also see a fair number of resettled refugees, so people who have come from places like Burma, Iraq, Afghanistan. And I think one of the things that probably hasn't been spoken to clearly around this issue is they are also will be affected. This is not something that's just affecting refugee claimants. This will affect those people that Canada has invited to come to the country and who have status in the country. And they will lose all coverage for medication. So
medication is the real across the board. Medication is, I mean, you're talking about those conditions those are conditions that are often controlled with medication, but a particular kind of regular, expensive kind of medication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it doesn't have to be necessarily in people who are incredibly ill. So certainly people who have things like high blood pressure, which is very common in Canada, but also in some refugee populations. People who might be very well controlled in terms of their diabetes. You know, children who have asthma, and we all know how common that is. So there are people out there who are healthy and productive and very well controlled on their medications and, you know, will now lose their health insurance to purchase them. You know, I think it's really important also to recognize that, you know, most of the people we've seen, and I've been working with refugees for over 10 years and have probably seen thousands of different groups of refugees come to Canada. These are people who arrive with nothing. I mean, it wouldn't be unusual, and I think you could argue it's almost the norm that people would arrive with one or two changes of clothing and, you know, less than $20 in their pocket. So we know when you're fleeing persecution, you often don't have time to gather things. So we really are dealing with some of the country's most vulnerable people here.
How have your patients reacted to the news of the cuts?
It's been catastrophic. I think they clearly realize that it'll have a tremendous impact on people. You know, we've started telling people in the last week or 2 weeks, and, you know, almost consistently the answer has been, you know, what are we going to do? And I don't think, you know, there's a long silence after that because there really isn't an answer. And this is where, you know, I've been quite amazed at the response from the medical community across the country. And, you know, I think as Canadians, we're quite privileged in many ways, and certainly in the healthcare world, you know, I truly feel we are privileged in where we're at. And I think it becomes an obligation to speak out for people who don't have a voice. And, you know, we had a day of action, a protest on May 11th, where we went into a federal MP's office here in Toronto. We were trying to get 10 or 12 people to come with us, physicians, and we had over 90. Since then, there's a large protest that will be planned in Vancouver, Calgary, Winnipeg, perhaps Regina. We're speaking to folks there. Toronto, Hamilton, Montreal, perhaps St. John's, Newfoundland. And on June 18th, there will be demonstrations across the country by healthcare workers. And, you know, I think it really speaks to how offended people are. Those of us that actually sit and talk to folks who've just gone through such immense trauma and incredible stories and, you know, arrive with such resiliency and optimism. And it seems inhumane to impose this on them. So, you know, it's been phenomenal. In my 20 years of practice, I've never seen the medical community respond like this to a patient care issue. And all across the country, we're seeing a response. Last Friday, there was a letter, an open letter presented to Mr. Kenny from the Canadian Medical Association, College of Family Physicians of Canada, the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada, national bodies that represent social workers, optometrists, pharmacists, nurses. You know, it's the breadth of the response has been quite striking, and I really think it speaks to how catastrophic these cuts will be.
Now, the government says that it can't afford this coverage anymore, and one of the arguments it makes is that many Canadians don't have coverage for dental work or for prescription drugs. What's your response to that?
So I think it's a really important point to address. The government has made three or four claims, and, you know, from where we sit, it seems that those claims are grossly inaccurate. So if we can break them down, I mean, the first is the issue of cost. And government numbers are that they'll be saving $100 million over 5 years. Now, for those of us who work in healthcare, $20 million a year sounds like a lot, but we know that we're talking about budgets of billions. The second thing is we realize that some of those costs, and we think quite a significant amount of money, is going to go into dealing with people who end up in emergency departments because of untreated and illnesses that were controlled with medications and seeing a physician. We think the lack of preventative care, and I think this has been shown repeatedly in health economics, that when you don't provide preventative care, it's more expensive to treat things downstream. And we also know that, you know, a significant percentage of refugee claimants, anywhere between 35 and 50%, will end up being Canadian citizens. There's also, you know, 8,000 to 9,000 resettled refugees who are landed immigrants on arrival and will be Canadian citizens. We know that healthcare systems are going to have to take care of those folks. And, you know, when you haven't provided them access to medications or care on arrival, that's problematic. So the cost argument, I don't think, really resonates with us. And, you know, I think when you break that down, you realize it really doesn't make a lot of sense. The second argument that's given is this issue of equity and the fact that other Canadians don't have access to, for example, medication formularies. That's incredibly misleading because we know low-income Canadians in almost all provinces will have access to medications through social assistance. Granted, there are people who are low-income and self-employed who don't have access to medications or emergency dental. We'd like to see access provided for those people, and I think sort of reaching for the lowest common denominator just doesn't make sense. The other thing to recognize, I mean, these are refugees. These are not people who come with money. These are people who are fleeing horrible life trauma, and I think if you're going to talk about equity, you know, equity is about providing people what they need, not necessarily providing everyone with the same minimal coverage. So none of that really makes sense as well to us, I think. And there have been good studies, some out of British Columbia, you know, looking at, for example, the migration from Southeast Asia, the Vietnamese migration, and folks from Cambodia, where people do quite well if you follow them long enough. Their rates of employment are high. And to provide them support upon arrival, I think, is just the right thing to do. Third argument that's been made is the idea that people get an immigrant health exam on arrival, which is also incredibly misleading because that exam is run by immigration. It's really looking for serious communicable disease. It has nothing to do with patient care. So the idea that people, you know, have that and that's satisfactory, I think, you know, again, really doesn't hold up to scrutiny. So it's, you know, the arguments that are presented publicly, I just don't think they're very compelling. I mean, I think
there is one other argument that the government makes is that they're bringing in these changes to reduce bogus claims.
Right. So, you know, the changes will affect all refugees. So this includes people who've been accepted into Canada, who have been identified as being people needed protection because they're fleeing persecution. So that seems odd. You know, if they want to reduce services for people who are failed refugee claimants, this seems like a strange way to do it because it is across the board affecting everyone. The other thing is that, you know, as I mentioned before, with refugee claimants, anywhere from 35 to 50% of people will end up being successful. That doesn't mean the rest are bogus. And, you know, for a lot of people, it's important to recognize that the definition of refugee is a very tight legal definition. So because someone isn't seen as being a refugee, that doesn't necessarily mean they're not fleeing something. You know, it also sometimes just implies that someone doesn't have the documentation to support their claims. So, you know, to paint everyone with that term, you know, it seems misleading and it seems pretty divisive. I think, you know, what you're doing is you're pitting Canadians against folks who, again, are some of the most vulnerable people in the world. And, you know, I don't know if that's the tenor that we should be approaching this discussion with.
I guess to me also the idea that people would be thinking about, oh, I think I'll go to Canada and I can get health care when they're fleeing a situation in that country is just preposterous.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for people who are fleeing persecution, I think it's probably the last thing on their mind. Dental care and when you arrive seems almost absurd. You know, I don't think this is going to do anything to stem the number of refugees coming to Canada. I think you could make the argument it's inhumane that, you know, if you have a child who's sick with epilepsy and you need to get medications, and, you know, if we believe, and I think we can break this down a bit further, and I don't know if it holds up to scrutiny, but if you believe that you're going to impose on that family a decision about whether you stay in an environment that might be dangerous or take someone to a place where their children won't be able to get the medication that they need, if that's the way we're going to approach how open we are to refugees, it seems quite inhumane to me.
It's been very good to talk to you this morning, and I was so heartened to see the response from doctors. It was really, really wonderful to see, and good luck with the campaign.
Yeah, and June 18th, we will have a large protest, and Vancouver will be involved. So just to let your audience know about that and keep their ears open if that's something they want to attend. And thank you very much for covering the issue.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Dr. Meb Rashid. He's director of the Crossroads Clinic for Refugees at Women's College Hospital in Toronto.